Hello and welcome back to now episode 37, I believe it is, of the Fundamentally Sound podcast. There's been clamoring for this. So Ben is currently in a car, I believe, right now, either back to Madison or from Madison. And so I had to call the guy that I think I get more requests to record with you than anyone else. And that is our guy, Sam Vecini. What's going on, Sam?
I am very thankful to your audience for that, first and foremost.
People like us together, and I'll be honest, I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why either. It's probably just because we're friends and like we talk every day anyway. Right. Like I am texting you probably like every 3 hours or so, something like that.
Woke up to a text message from you this morning.
Right, exactly. So it's just like, I don't know, we probably have a really good rapport together, so that helps. But you know, I'm always very thankful to the audience for, you know, wanting me to come back on your excellent podcast.
Yeah, for sure. So what we have going on today is we're going to talk about, obviously, the Michael Porter stuff, some of the tournaments, but then we're going to play a game which kind of stemmed from my podcast I did with you, or on your podcast, which everyone should go subscribe, rate, and review, which is called the Game Theory Podcast. You can find it in iTunes, Stitcher, all that good stuff, where me and you did the 21 questions. Shout out Megan Good. This one is going to be called Hot Take, Bold Take, which we'll discuss as we get to there. But obviously, we have to start today with the Michael Porter news that he is essentially – I mean, he's out for the season. There's no way around it, barring some miracle rehab and recovery for surgery on the L3 and L4. It was the most mysterious injury, kind of was the biggest storyline in college basketball last week.
Yeah, I mean, like, no one knew what was going on.
Right.
I found that entire deal very odd and off-putting. Like, Missouri said at first it was a hip, and then it was like a leg injury.
Right.
And now it's a back injury. I will say that, like, as someone who has had back issues in the past, so like one of my lower vertebrae is like slightly out of place, and that can cause me like debilitating back issues occasionally.
Oh yeah, I've been having back spasms since I was 15, 16.
Yeah, like I've been there with Michael Porter, not nearly as bad as what Porter has, I'm sure, but like I can understand how, you know, first you think it's a hip, and then you think it's upper leg thing where the upper leg is just a little bit numb. And then you finally realize, oh shit, now I'm like strung up on my back the entire day because I can't move. So like, I totally understand where Porter's coming from with this and where Missouri is. It was just mysterious and bizarre.
Did I ever tell you my back injury story in the middle of a recruiting visit?
No, but this sounds amazing.
So, going into my senior year, I went and was invited and played at the Reebok Eastern Invitational camp where I played completely out of my mind. Best basketball I've ever played in my life, won MVP. And then the next week I was playing at the Keystone Games, which was the state Olympics in Pennsylvania, where there was like 10 different regions. You know, you played for your certain region, and it was like pool play and then medal play if you advanced. And so I took a nasty fall at Reebok. So I had scouts being like, hey, we're going to come watch you at the Keystone Games. Perfect. Cool. My very first play there in my very first game, I get fouled. I go to the free throw line, take my three dribbles, take my breath, bend my legs, go to shoot a free throw, and my back gives out, and the ball lands about 4 feet in front of me.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. The ball just landed. Like, it was the worst looking thing I've ever seen in my life. And I look up. I'm, like, laying face down on the ground. I look up, and I just see everyone walking out of the gym. I'm like, all right, good to come out, guys. Thanks a lot. I'll see you guys later.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's horrible.
So I feel for Michael Porter because it's not fun. It is not fun. And he is a lot better than I ever was and has a lot more at stake. Which is obviously now kind of the talking point from one angle is, how does this affect his NBA draft stock? Does it affect his NBA draft stock? Does he come back? Which I think there's all pretty definite answers, but I kind of want to make sure I'm not crazy here.
So, I mean, look, it's never good when someone has a back injury, right? And I'll kind of go into more of that in a minute. But right now, I think it's probably worth preaching caution. NBA teams are going to get a look at his medical reports. Now, there is going to be an interesting dynamic here where he wields an awful lot of power now. I'm not saying this injury was a good thing. It's certainly not a good thing. It sucks, and I hope that he gets healthy. And it's really sad that he's not going to be able to play college basketball this year, and it really seems like he wanted to play with his brother and wanted to play with his dad on the sidelines and wanted to play for Konzo Martin. Like, it seems like that mattered to him, and it's, you know, disappointing that he won't be able to play it, but he's going to wield a lot of control now. His team is going to be able to withhold medical reports if they so want to the point where it's going to be really interesting to see if they kind of decide to pick and choose who they want to draft them. You saw a similar situation, for instance, with Kristaps Porzingis. Porzingis just flat out didn't meet with 76ers before the draft because he didn't want to get drafted to Philadelphia. So it could be a situation kind of similar to that where, you know, he's going to actually have a ton of power now through the pre-draft process. And, you know, it's worth pointing out too, like, these 30 games or whatever Michael Porter was going to play in college is less of a sample than what NBA scouts have already seen of him. So this is a non-exhaustive list of the events Michael Porter has played at where NBA personnel has been present. The 2017 McDonald's All-American game, that also has a week's worth of practice. The 2017 Nike Hoop Summit also has a week's worth of practice. 2017 Adidas Nations is like a four-day event. 2016 U18 FIBA Americas Tournament, you know, a couple weeks playing all of the Central America teams. Multiple USA basketball camps that are multiple day events there. Nike Basketball Academy, I think plural, he's been there a couple times. So, like, NBA people are very familiar with Michael Porter. Like, they don't need to see Michael Porter in college to know. Hindered by this injury, both short and long term.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on what you said. I just, you know, obviously the question that, and I agree with you that the worst part is the college basketball, outside of Porter and his family, the worst part is college basketball fans are robbed of watching just a great player. You know, like he was the reason people actually thought Missouri had a chance to compete at, you know, a national level this year, whether it was second weekend, SEC, however you look at it. He's that prototypical small ball four. They had depth. They have obviously talent with him and his brother, Jeremiah Toman. It just kind of sucks that you're robbed of this guy who you're only going to see for a year. But, yeah, you know, in a top-heavy draft, I'm just kind of – interested to see how it plays out, obviously, with the rehab and everything like that and where it goes from there. So what happens with Missouri now?
If you watch the Utah game, yeah. Probably not a lot. Real quick with Porter, I just want to point out a couple of stats here, just like for his long-term viability. This comes from Jeff Stotts, who runs InStreetClothes.com. He's one of like the forefront, foremost, you know, injury experts, who has like a database of, you know, how past injuries have affected past players and how to project forward with players who then get injured. Three out of four, you know, players who have microdiscectomy or whatever this thing is called that Michael Porter is having, have gone on to have future back issues and miss games in the future. It's worth pointing out, though, that there are factors in Porter's favor. I guess that the location of the injury being in like the middle slash upper part of the back is a little bit better than if it was in the lower back, which is a good sign. Also, his age helps him. Younger players tend to recover from this stuff in a little bit more of a coherent manner. So that's really, really good. But, you know, that 3 out of 4 number is scary for his long term outlook. In terms of Missouri, yeah, they needed him.
Yeah, that's the nicest way to put it.
Kind of not another way to put it. Like, They kicked the hell out of Iowa State before Iowa State moved Nick Weiler-Babb to point guard and ended up winning whatever weird-ass tournament they were in this week.
Were they in Charleston? Or were they in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, I think that was it. I think they were in the Puerto Rico Myrtle Beach tournament. They won that, though. So, like, yeah. Iowa State bounced back, and I think that win might not age terribly for them. If you watch the Utah game, though, like a team that is experienced and like coherent in terms of the way it attacks you and can really take you out of your comfort zone.
Super well coached.
Yeah, super, super well coached with Larry Krzkowiak. Like, they're in trouble. You know, like just having guys like Jeremiah Tillman and Jonte Porter and Blake Harris, like that helps. Those young guys are really, really good. But you have to remember, like, this is the core of a team outside of those guys that went, I want to say, like 8-24. And Konzo's certainly a better coach than Kim Anderson, but like, it's just not a good roster, you know, right. Like at the end of the day, that's kind of the deal. And without Porter, it's hard for me to see how they go like 8-10 in the SEC even.
Yeah. Especially the way the SEC looks coming out of the gate. All right. So let's move on from there. Obviously it's been talked about with Porter and it just sucks. It's the only way to put it because, you know, you try to be college basketball tries to get these stars and they do a good job. I think college basketball does a pretty good job of getting star names out there. I mean, we look at like how much ESPN had Ben Simmons on when he was at LSU and everything like that. You know, Porter was kind of going to be down there. This week, obviously, is Feast Week. Ton of tournaments. Headline, Maui, PK80, Battle for Atlantis. Maui going on right now. We got Wichita already in the finals. Notre Dame and LSU will be playing later today. Is it weird to see like kind of a weaker Maui field?
I feel like we've been seeing Maui weakened a little bit in the past couple years, I guess. So like, I know that North Carolina won it last year, but who did they play in the championship? Wisconsin. I don't remember. Wisconsin. Yeah. And that Wisconsin team ended up being pretty good, I guess.
Yeah. And yet, and like Oregon was in it, but they lost in the first round to Georgetown.
Yeah, that's really good, too. I forgot about that. Actually was a really good field last year. Now I'm thinking about it, like I can remember talking to scouts that like were saying, yeah, we have to go down there and then come back up for Wooden because Wooden had a decent field with like Robert Williams the UCLA guys and everything like that. Yeah, it's a little bit strange just because PK80 has sapped so much of the talent.
Sure.
16 teams in a one-time event is going to do that, especially when Nike wields the influence that it does. I don't know. I mean, I'm excited for the PK80.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say that. Like, it's going to be great.
To me, it's like growing up, Maui was the tournament, and it really, to me, Maui signified like the start of the season. And I still like,
kind of, yeah.
I still kind of have that bias towards it just because I have so many memories of like watching these Maui games growing up. Like I remember when Ball State made the run in what would that have been? My freshman year of high school. So that'd been like 2001 Maui. Like I still remember things like that. It's like, okay, well that's when the season started. And it's just weird, like watching Maui tonight, like this week and being like, yeah, you just hope that it's Wichita and Notre Dame.
Yeah. And then we were deprived, I guess, of the awesome offensive Notre Dame Michigan matchup because LSU beat them last night. Like that was going to be such a fun game.
Yep.
And I'm so disappointed that we don't get to see it. So yeah, that's a little bit disheartening. I agree with you there.
What we do get to see, actually, I'm going to save that for later. Go ahead. Go with what you were going to say.
So I guess that where I'll go from there is that like the PK80 is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I believe that it starts on Thursday, right?
Yes, so like, it does start Thursday afternoon.
We get a ton of really, really good matchups on TV. We get a ton to watch on Thanksgiving. Hopefully, I will be allowed to watch things on Thanksgiving. We're actually hosting this year.
Oh.
We have like 9 people coming, so quite a bit going on. We did ham. We did turkey. We've got stuffing. We've got people bringing like a lot of different stuff. So a lot going on at the Vicini household / apartment in Hollywood, California. Hopefully I will be able to watch some basketball, but at the end of the day, I'm excited for the PK 80. I think we're going to get a lot of really, really good matchups. And, you know, I don't know that the net effect is overall like super negative.
Yeah, no, because you're right. That is awesome. My only complaint is I wish it was just a 16-team tournament. Like,
You know what? Now that I think of, I agree with you there. The 16-team tournament.
Right. Like, who cares if there's conference? Like, it doesn't count towards anything. It just counts for your regular overall record.
Yeah, I agree. I am out on Maui this year because they took Bill Walton off.
Yes. Yeah. That was a complaint that my Twitter notifications blew up on. So we're recording this on Tuesday night. Yesterday on Monday night when it went to Dokić instead of Walton, everyone was just like, where the hell is Bill? Like, did he get lost on the island? Is he stoned wandering around volcanoes? Like, what is going on? Right. Like, it's all completely possible. Like, he might be swimming there for all we know. Like, he's coming to save this tournament. Late night Bill Walton is a miss. But you know what? Speaking of Bill Walton, I'm so giddy for him calling bowl games next year out in Oregon. The storytelling is going to be phenomenal.
I mean, like, we're just missing out on Bill Walton's storytelling right now. It just makes me sad.
Like he'd be calling this Chaminade Michigan game.
Just like imagine the shit he would be talking about, like Chaminade in Michigan. Bill, come back. Come back to our lives.
Right. And you know what? I completely forgot that he wasn't calling. I remember like ESPN put out a release last year. Like it was pretty early like in the year where they're like, yeah, like there's a shakeup of like who's calling what games. And it's like, wait a minute. You're not sending Bill to – you're sending Bill to China, but you're not going to send him to Maui where he belongs? Come on.
Can we talk real quick though about Mike Bray?
I have that for that's one of my questions.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no, good. It's one of my questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, that's absolutely one of my questions. The last one I want to talk about, Battle for Atlantis. Real quick, PK80. What are the two one matchup on each side of the bracket that you are hoping to see?
The one that we want is Michigan State.
Yes. That's
probably the best matchup. And
they're in the motion, right? Or are they in victory?
I don't know the names of the brackets, to be honest. And then Duke has like a funky kind of side. Unless if you're high on Florida, you're probably rooting for Florida on that side. But the bottom half of the region of the bracket with Duke is Gonzaga, Ohio State,
Stanford. Florida,
Stanford.
Yeah.
Stanford is down 3 rotation players right now. Florida is still kind of getting its pieces together, as they showed against New Hampshire. Ohio State looks better than what we thought, but it's still Ohio State and probably not all that good. And Gonzaga, you know, I've seen them practice. I've seen them multiple games now. They're also still kind of figuring out all of their pieces after such a long year of losing 4 of their top 5 scorers and Zach Collins a year ahead of schedule and everything.
Who are the two teams? Again, I say two because one from each bracket that you think could, change the public perception of them.
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. Let me pull up the bracket because I need to visualize this.
I have it here. So in the victory bracket is North Carolina, Portland, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Georgetown.
Oklahoma. Oklahoma's in that side for sure. Oklahoma's looked really, really good.
Yeah, so they have. Trey Young is really good.
They're really young, but Trey Young looks unbelievable. Yeah. Looks like a top 10 recruit in that class so far. We'll see like how Trey Young is against length though. Like this has always been the big question. Is he going to be as effective due to the low release point on his shot and due to his overall lack of size and vertical explosion whenever he's going up against longer, bigger players? I don't know if that's going to be the case. We'll find out.
I think Oregon on the other side, could be the other answer too there.
Oregon's a good answer too because Oregon just has so many new pieces coming off the Final Four.
I don't think anybody knows what to expect with them.
Yeah, no, I certainly don't. Troy Brown looks as good as advertised so far. I think he's at like 17-6-3. Basically what everyone hoped for from Troy Brown. You know, like Peyton Pritchard looks good. Roman Sorkin had an unbelievable first game. Paul White has looked okay after that first game that I don't believe he played in. I'm fascinated by that group. I just don't know what to expect.
Yeah, yeah. And they could get some good games. Like UConn, you know, that's just an interesting matchup because it's who, again, UConn could win this thing and I wouldn't be surprised, and UConn could lose every single game, including to Portland, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
What about in the bottom half where you have Duke, Portland State, Butler, Texas, Florida, Stanford, Gonzaga, Ohio State?
Oh, man. Who's the second matchup?
Butler, Texas.
It's probably one of those schools. I would probably say Texas, although I guess people are pretty high on Texas as it is.
Yeah.
I just really want the Mo Bamba Marvin Bagley matchup. Like that's that really all
awesome.
I'm asking
for. Yeah, that would be
it's
awesome.
It's not asking a lot here.
Just want
the Mo Bamba Marvin Bagley matchup.
They're both going to probably be favored in those games, so just do what Vegas tells you to do, and we get that.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping so, man. That side is not as interesting to me.
I was gonna say, I wish Oklahoma or Oregon would switch places with like Butler or Ohio State.
Yeah, I agree. That would have made it so much more interesting. And I think that they were anticipating Stanford to be a little bit better than what they are. But again, they're very injured. Florida is a top 10 team right now.
Yeah.
So like, you know. Some people are high on Florida.
Right, like if you get Duke, Florida, that's not a bad November matchup.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think that it's going to be a really good tournament. I'm just a lot more interested in the left side than the right side.
Sure. And then we'll go to Battle for Atlantis. Three teams that really stick out there, Arizona, Villanova, and Purdue. Arizona's on the top half. Villanova and Purdue are paired up on the bottom half. What's your, I guess, general overview of this? What has lately kind of been perceived as the best, I should say, kind of early season tournament?
I mean, this is, if things go right, still going to give us the best matchup at the end.
Yep.
In Arizona-Villanova. What I will say about this is that I think that Purdue has been playing better than maybe any of these teams coming in. Like, they look better than Villanova right now, I think. Villanova's a better team, but, like, they look really, really good. Purdue is the best shooting team in the country, I think, just full stop. They had the best numbers coming back from this year, and they have not changed from those numbers coming into this year. Whenever you can surround Isaac Haas with Dakota Mathias and Ryan Klein and all of the millions of guys that they have on that roster who can knock down threes. Vince Edwards is a good three-point shooter. It just makes your life so much easier because you can start trading threes for twos even if you have to come back. Villanova looks really good. They're very switchable defensively. They're a little bit deeper than they were last year. Arizona is a behemoth right now. And they don't even have Raleigh Alkins, it looks like,
yeah,
still for this tournament. You know, like Alonzo Trier is averaging 30 a night. DeAndre Ayton's putting up double-double after double-double after double-double. And I'm just fascinated with that team. They are probably, to me, they're the most talented team, like full stop. Michigan State's probably the deepest team. Duke has the best 1-5.
Right.
But to me, Arizona is the best mix of those two. And to me, that makes them the best team. They're just so good. They are unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean they definitely are, and it's gonna be scary when they get Raleigh Alkins back. Are you hoping for, what are you hoping for here? Do you want to see Arizona Villanova or do you want to see Arizona Purdue?
I want to see Arizona Villanova for sure. I mean, they're two of my top four teams coming into the year. That'd be amazing, and the matchups there would be so fascinating because you have, you know, the dual big man inside of Ayton and Dusan Ristich versus Villanova, who's not really all that big inside.
Hey, like, they have dual big men. It's just Eric Paschal and Amari Spellman.
Seriously, like Eric Paschal would be guarding DeAndre Ayton. Can you imagine that?
I mean, yes, only because it's Villanova. That's the only reason I can imagine that.
Yeah, like Paschal had to guard Isaac Haas last year. And we're going to get that again, hopefully, in the second round of this tournament, seeing that monster Isaac Haas.
Yeah, and Villanova just attacked the hell out of him then when he was on defense.
Pascal was sneaky decent against them, though. Like, yeah, he battled.
They did a really good job. I remember watching that game last year. And what was weird about that game last year, too, is Jalen Brunson did not play well.
Like, yeah, Jalen, I remember that.
That might have been Jalen Brunson's worst game of his career.
Yeah, to me, that tournament is still really, really good. I'm really excited for that one. I think it's going to be amazing.
Is there any team that could possibly disrupt a Villanova and or Purdue versus Arizona title game here?
Oh, that's a good question.
Could Tennessee give Purdue fits just because they kind of play they remind me of an old Purdue team in the sense of they're just going to ugly the game up.
Yeah. Yeah. Tennessee is a team that I think is really, really underrated. Like I think that I picked them on our preview podcast as like the most undervalued team
right.
in the country entering the year. Like the fact that they're picked 13th in the SEC is bizarre to me. I don't really think that they're going to cause any issues here though. Unfortunately, who do they have in the first round? Do they have Purdue or SMU?
They have Purdue. Remember. SMU is you and I.
Yeah.
And then the winner of that plays Arizona, assuming they beat NC State.
Yeah. Like I think that Tennessee can probably beat Purdue. I don't think they can beat Villanova or Arizona though.
Right. That's the only possible upset you see, right? Like Villanova's not losing to Western Kentucky. Arizona's not losing to NC State, UNI, or SMU.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think we're going to get lucky there in that we're going to see at least Villanova, Purdue, and then Arizona versus the winner. I love this week though. So we're going to segue from that into, like I said, hot take, bold take is the name of this one. I have like 12, I think 12 written down statements that I'm going to make where you're going to tell me hot take, which is I'm out on my own crazy ass mind, making things up in my head, which I tend to do.
Not all that unusual.
No, versus bold take of, okay, this makes sense. You're definitely not on an island. You're probably you're in the minority, but it's a logical statement. And then we'll obviously talk about it and discuss why. So we're going to stick with the battle for Atlantis and a Big Ten team there in Purdue who I know the answer on this. This is the hot take of I don't think Purdue is a top 25 team in the country right now.
You said that you don't think Purdue is top 25?
I put my top 25 out on Monday, and I did not have Purdue in it.
Yeah, you're on drugs.
Right. Like
full stop. That is not just a hot take. That is you are like on total drugs right now.
Right. This is just the hill I'm dying on this year.
Yeah.
And like, they probably are a top 25 team, and I'm just doing it because I was like, well, I didn't have them in last week. I'm just not going to put them again this week.
Like Ken Pom, it still has a lot of preseason stuff in there right now, right. But you know they're picked to win the Big Ten right now.
Yeah, which I still don't think they're close to Michigan State.
I agree, but they also went on the road and beat Marquette by 15. Like,
yeah, and I had Purdue fans yell at me at that yesterday, and Purdue's a terrible matchup for Marquette because they can just overpower them. I also just think Marquette is...
Well, Purdue's a better version of Marquette because they can shoot like Marquette. They just also are good defensively.
Right. And Marquette's probably going to be an NCAA tournament team, but they're a lot closer to the bubble than they are lock, I think. Like, I think Marquette could easily finish eighth in the Big East.
Yeah, 100% agreed.
So it's like, okay, if that's what you're hanging your hat on right now, yes, it's a win against a Power Six conference, but I'm not like, you know, I'm not running to the bank with it. Like I think the Minnesota win at Providence is a lot more impressive, and I think there's been other, you know, kind of better wins. My thing is, and I've talked about this nonstop, I know they're a good 3-point shooting team. I just don't trust Isaac Haas to get them open shots or to be a factor against good competition.
I think those are totally fair points. I just also think that that's the difference between them being like a top 15 team versus a top like 25 team, you know, like they're really good.
Like, I have them somewhere in, like, the top 30 range, top 32 range, yeah. Something like that. It's not like I'm putting them, like, if I listed 1 to 351, I'm not putting them at, like, you know, like 72 or some shit like that.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know, and it's – that's my hot take, and I knew that was a hot take.
Riggs, I'm telling you, UT Arlington, man, it's 5-2 already. Feel the noise.
I mean, yeah.
I think I said this off the podcast. I'm riding UT Arlington plus 450 tonight, so I'm loving it.
I mean, that's just great value too, because the spread went up. I think it opened at like 9.5, 10.
Yeah, and it got to 11. I was like, why is this?
I saw it 11.5 right before we came on.
Yeah, weird deal. Also, Colin Sexton just like banked in a terrible looking three.
Awesome. I live for banked threes. sticking with the Big Ten. And these hot take, bold takes, they're going to be everything from logical basketball things to off the wall, off the rails basketball things. Maryland will be a top 4 Big Ten team this year.
Oh, bold take, not a hot take.
Okay, that's kind of what I was leaning at with that one, I thought.
Yeah, so like I think Purdue, Michigan State, Minnesota are the three, right? Yeah, I think you could easily put Maryland at 4.
Yeah,
it's one of them or... Like, honestly, I think Penn State's really good.
They're a lot. I was pretty high on Penn State coming into the year, being like, yeah, you know what? I think they're an NIT team, but can be close to the bubble. And now I'm starting to think the opposite.
Yeah, no, I think that they might, like, be a full stop, like, NCAA tournament team. Like, right. They're really, really good.
Right. Like, they are what I think everyone thought Iowa was going to be.
Yeah, Iowa's not good.
No, Iowa sucks.
Iowa's cost me a bit of money this week.
Same here.
Me and the Hawkeye fans are not on good terms.
No, I'm owing to this year.
Maryland, though, what I've liked about Maryland so far is we're getting exactly what we thought from Kevin Huerter and Justin Jackson. You know, Anthony Cowan's been really, really good outside of that last game against Jackson State. Basically exactly what everyone could have possibly imagined Anthony Cowan to be, basically an all Big Ten level point guard.
Is it crazy that he gets like 5 rebounds a game?
A little bit, yeah. He's like 5'11".
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. He's a really, really good defensive rebounder. But the two big guys that have stood out to me when they've been on the floor, Bruno Fernando is really good. Like, we knew he was going to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we knew. Like, he's energetic. He's tough. You know, going to block a billion shots. But Daryl Morsell is not a guy that, or Morsell, like, I don't know how the fuck to say it, but like, he's not a guy I was familiar with coming into the year.
Right, right.
He is good. He is a awesome, awesome slasher. He knows exactly how to get into like the inside the arc and get his shot exactly where he wants it.
Yeah, no, I think Maryland was arguably the most underrated team coming head into the season. So I just wanted to see. Because obviously when you talk top 4 in the Big Ten, you're throwing out names like Northwestern, Purdue, Michigan State, Michigan possibly. So people kind of forget about Maryland, I think. So moving on from there, we touched on Penn State. My question is, one of these two teams will be in the NCAA tournament, Arizona State and Penn State.
Oh, man. And I just have to say if that's a hot take or a bold take, or yep. Am I picking one?
Nope. Well, we'll lead into that. But is that a hot take or a bold take?
I don't even think it's bold. I think it's right. Like, yeah. I think it's going to happen.
I wrote this down before the A&M game tonight where they obviously kind of looked the part of an NCAA tournament team there.
I mean, they've looked the part all year. Like, they've blown teams out.
Sure.
Like, you know, that Pitt game was incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
They're really, really good, I think. They're full stop. They're a really good basketball team.
They're going to be good for a couple years, too.
I'm sorry, say that again?
They should be good for a couple years, too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think Tony Carr's leaving. He's their best player, probably. Yeah. But, like, I don't think he's good enough to go pro. Yeah, I think they're really, really good. Arizona State, I also think, is really good. They kicked the hell out of a talented San Diego State team. Like, that team is really good. And the point that Bobby Hurley keeps making about them is that they're a lot more balanced than they were last year.
Right.
Trey Holder, Shannon Evans, Cody Justice. We knew what we were going to get out of those guys. Even like Remy Martin is, you know, by the way, it's fucking awesome that there's a college basketball player named Remy Martin.
Does not get enough pub for that alone.
does not get enough pub for that. But they have size inside this year. They have Daquan Lake, a big JUCO guy. They have Romello White, who, you know, the kid who I think was committed to Georgia Tech first and then moved to Arizona State late in the process after Pastner got hired and was a partial qualifier last year, so he couldn't play. Really, really good player. Overall, this is a really, really good basketball team. I think that they're going to be awesome throughout the year. I kind of think that – I absolutely think one of these two teams makes it. They might both make it. They're both really good.
Arizona State reminds me of Wake Forest from last year, where they're just going to outscore everybody in the country.
A little bit, yeah.
Except for maybe Marquette.
A little bit. They're a little bit better defensively than I think Wake was last year, but yeah.
But kind of that surprise power, you know, Power Six conference team where – next thing you look up and they're like, wow, they're, you know, six in the, well, they should be fifth in the Pac-12, but if the Pac-12 was deeper, being like, wow, they're, you know, they're sixth in the Pac-12, where the hell did these guys come from?
Yeah, you know what? Like, I was an idiot. I had them like seventh or eighth in the Pac-12 entering the year.
Because I think I had Providence at, or Providence. I had Stanford.
I had Stanford.
At five. Yeah.
I was very high on Stanford. They're just very injured right now. It's fine. But, like, this Arizona State team's for real. They're really good. They're really, really good.
Staying out west, Alonzo Trier is the best scorer in the country.
Bold take. Definitely not a hot take. You can absolutely make that argument. I think I would concur with it. I think I would agree with you. You know, anytime you're picking one player to be the best at a single thing, there's a little bit of hotness there, I guess.
Yeah, sure. But someone will say, what about this guy? What about this guy? What about this guy?
Right. Having said that, though, I do really like Trier. I think he's been awesome.
Yeah. And to me, it's to be like the quote best scorer, it tends to be a wing more than any other position. And a guy on the wing who can beat you off the dribble or beat you off catch and shoot. And there's just a limited amount of guys that can do that.
Yeah, 100% agreed. He's so good in the mid-range right now. Like, he's making every mid-range shot. He has that, like, hesitation, step-back, hop-step, like, 20-footer where it just goes, oh, my God, Eric Neal just made an outrageous three in this UT Arlington Alabama game. Alonzo Trier is just – unbelievable in terms of his scoring instincts. Like, he knows exactly where he is.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I agree with that.
Just wild, wild hard. I think this is going to stick. I think he's going to average like 23, 24, 25 again.
That makes sense. Kevin Stallings is the worst major conference hire since Billy Gillespie.
Worse.
How far back do you have to go for a – and the way I'm looking at this is in terms of program, like where they were to where they are now, what they had, like just overall view of the program.
Before I started writing about college basketball, like I really don't know. That's how far
back you're going?
Yeah. That's like,
a lot. Yeah.
Billy Gillespie like made the tournament. At Kentucky.
They did. He did make it one out of 2 years.
Like, he was terrible. Don't get me wrong. Like, he was really, really bad. But, man, Kevin Stallings is so bad. Good.
I know. And I'm trying to. I'm just trying to think of other hires at the major Tubby conference Smith, level.
I think, is bad.
I mean, Tubby at Memphis?
Yeah, like Tubby Smith right now has no talent on that Memphis team and can't get any of the talent in Memphis to commit to Memphis. Like, do you know how good Penny Hardaway's teams are?
They're really good.
They're unbelievable. To not be able to get any of those kids to go to Memphis is insane.
The other name I would throw out there for worst hire is Jeff Bizdelic at Wake Forest.
That was a bad one. That was a really bad one.
He drove that program into the ground.
Kevin Stallings is doing a damn good job of doing it right now.
I'm just trying to think, like, how far back it actually is. And it's not a great honor to have, but.
And do you know how over. Yeah, well, first and foremost, I'm from Pittsburgh. So, like, like, Briggs is from, like, the central part of the state. Like, I'm from. Like, I lived on Pitt's campus for a year when I was at Carnegie Mellon. So, like, this is near and dear to my heart for some ungodly reason. Kevin Sullivan, like, there are still Pitt fans out there who blame Jamie Dixon for
this.
Which
is just insane.
Kevin Stallings has had four kids transfer, including Cam Johnson. He kicked Justice Kithcart off the team last year for, like, mysterious circumstances that, like, no one really knows. He lost Aaron Thompson, the kid at Butler right now,
yep.
who's, like, a really good point guard, like, a four-star point guard. And, like, who the fuck has he brought in? He hasn't brought anyone in.
No, that's what I keep saying. It's, like, it's not one of those, hey, give him 3 years till his guys get here and into the system.
No.
There's nobody coming.
No, they should fire him, like, by the end of the calendar year.
Yeah, they should fire him before they get back from Brooklyn.
Because, like, they lost to Penn State by 30.
Yeah, and Penn State is what Pittsburgh should be.
Yes. And you know what? Like, Penn State should have a good basketball program. I think that's 100% true. But Penn State, man, like, this Pitt program before Stallings took over was rolling enough to where there's not really an excuse for it to have fallen this quickly.
They were a number one seed within the last decade.
Oh yeah, like it's not even that. Like, you go back through their recent, like, you know, not even decade. You go back through even the last 6 years. In 2011, yep. They were a number one seed. In 2013, 2014, 2016, made the NCAA tournament. In that 2013 year, they were a really, really good team in a very deep Big East. Like, this is Jamie Dixon. 2007 to 2011, 3 seed, 4 seed, 1 seed, 3 seed, 1 seed in the NCAA tournament. The guy is an unbelievable coach, and there are Pitt fans still just, like, don't give him any sort of credit for what he was able to do. And, like, there are people who were like, oh, well, Jamie Dixon left the cupboard bare for Kevin Stallings. He left him Michael Young and Jamel Artis, both of whom are on two-way contracts right now, and Pitt went for a losing record last year. Yep. That is embarrassing.
Yep. Cam Johnson. You had Cam Johnson last year too.
Left him Cam Johnson. Left him Damon Wilson, who was, like, a really high level recruit. I think that Manigault got, like, kind of booted, right? Like, something weird happened
still
there.
Still had Roselle Nix, who's just a big body that you can throw out there to steal minutes.
Right. Like, Sheldon Jeter was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for him, had to reunite with Stallings.
Yeah. Just, that was the worst hire I think I have ever seen in my life. It was
tough to top that one. Like, you know, people yell at me because I'm like, you know, I'm fine. Like, I was fine with Dixon being forced out because it's like, if you feel like you hit your peak, whether you're on either side, as a coach with the program or a program with a coach, I'm fine moving on from there. But you need to make a hire that makes sense. This didn't make sense.
This made less than zero sense.
Right. Like, the moment it happened, it's like, no. Like, the same Kevin Stallings? Like, is there a mid-major coach Kevin Stallings that everyone's not realizing?
Kevin Stallings tried to get the pitch job so he could watch his son play baseball. Yeah. Like, he didn't actually – like, I feel like he didn't actually want to come and, like, coach this team. He was like, oh, I can make, like, a few million dollars a year watching my son play baseball.
Right, right.
And like, kicking – punting footballs, like, in Pitt football practice.
Yeah. No, it's one of those, like – yeah, it was just a worse hire. So we'll move on from there. This is the second best week of the college basketball season.
Bold take. Hot take. I'd say hot take.
I think people are going to say hot because they'll say, what about the first week of the NCAA tournament?
Second week of the NCAA tournament, I still think is better than this, too. I would also say conference tournament week.
Conference tournament week is the best week.
Yeah. Like, I'm in, like, you know, with the Big Ten moving back its tournament and we get, like, some little tournaments with the Big Ten, I can see that, like, being a really good week now, too. Yeah, that's a hot take for me. It's a great week. It's probably, like, fourth or fifth, but it's not top two.
See, I think, to me, I like it top two just because it's always a little crazier than I think, like, the first week of the NCAA tournament's awesome. Second week of the NCAA tournament's awesome. But you know what you're in. And you get way more games during this week. You get way more AM games, too. But you also just get, like, the crazy games happen. Like last year when Georgetown beat Oregon for no reason. Or, you know, like, Ball State makes a run or whatever.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll go with that. Jordan Murphy
can
continue this start and be a, you know, top one of the three team All-Americans.
Hot take, but he can be really good. I think he can be all Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so too with the Big Ten. I don't necessarily believe that statement. It was a question that we got on Twitter, and I just kind of formed it into that question. I just don't trust a guy who's not a center that can't shoot. To continue the start that he has.
Yeah, he's a really good player. Would you rather have him or Ethan Happ?
I'd rather have Ethan Happ because I think Ethan Happ changes the game more drastically on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot to say on Jordan Murphy because he's starting unbelievably, and I don't think it's really worth like shitting on his start.
No, but, like, it's an unbelievable start. I mean, it's so good that you're actually having conversations about just how good he is.
Right. You know, like he's, I think, up over 20 points in every game, or if he isn't, like he had like 19 in one of them. Like, really, really good basketball player. Really, really good basketball player. Was terrific in the Providence game. I think he had like 23 and 14. I didn't watch the USC Upstate game where I think he had like, did he have like 40? He had like 38,
35 40, and 15, like I think that. It was, wasn't it?
Yeah, like he was unbelievable in that game. I just didn't watch it. He's really good. He's a really good basketball player. Minnesota's a really good team. I don't think he's going to be an All-American, though.
After the Champions Classic, I feel better about Kentucky than I do Kansas as a potential national title contender.
Probably a hot take, if only because we like Kentucky's going to get Silvio D'Souza and they're going to get Sam Cunliffe healthy.
Kansas gets those guys.
Yeah. I'm sorry. So like they're going to get a lot of those guys, and it's going to be a little bit interesting. They're going to have some different pieces to play with. Bill Self needs interior depth. D'Souza is certainly going to provide that. So I'd still probably say that's a hot take, but I understand where you're going with it at least.
So my take is, and I'll put it this way. I don't think Kentucky is a national title contender. I don't necessarily think Kansas is a national title contender.
Yeah.
But I feel better about Kentucky simply because, A, I feel like I know what Kansas is. Like I think Kansas's ceiling – Kentucky is a higher ceiling, lower floor than Kansas. Like Kansas is going to be who they are. Like they're not going to be drastically different in March than they looked like, you know, now. Like you mentioned, they do get Cunliffe, they do get D'Souza. So maybe, you know, maybe an uptick or two. Like Kentucky, though, there's always just that development, especially during Christmas where they go through – The two-a-days or whatever. They still get Jared Vanderbilt back. They should get Jamal Baker back. So, again, I'm just going more higher ceiling. Obviously, Kentucky has a much, much, much lower floor than I think Kansas does.
Yeah, I 100% agree that the ceiling is higher. I'm just not there on them reaching that ceiling now.
And that's completely fair.
Yeah, I just don't – like, their defense – is not as good as what we were hoping it would be. And you know, I think it's just youth, you know?
That's somewhat the shocking thing is just how lost they look defensively.
Yeah, it's hard. When you're that young and have that many young pieces on the floor at once, it's hard.
And especially with Calipari's scheme where it is a lot of switching and a lot of rotations and correct rotations off the switches, it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do when you're adapting to the college game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's not an unfair take. Like I said, like I think it's a hot take, but I understand where you're going with it at least. Right.
Mike Bray's Maui outfit should be his year-long outfit, and he should coach the second half of a Maui game with a frozen margarita.
Again, correct take. Not
that was
take,
the greatest outfit ever. Take.
Like for people who didn't. Like t-shirt, shorts, like just looked like he came up off of the beach.
He was
like after a day
bar.
At the beach. Yeah, and was just like, sure.
Bar. He was at the swim-up bar, forgot he had the game, went shirtless to the gym, and bought that Notre Dame shirt for $25 from a vendor in the lobby. Like, that's what it looked like. I've seen that Notre Dame shirt for sale.
Yes, that's exactly what it looked like. It did. Yes, correct take. That should be his outfit. I'm all in on, like, so, like, people say that Mike Bray looks like a lounge singer, like, half the time, just because he'll wear, like, the open neck and, like, the bigger jacket and everything like that. Like, he's not someone who's super worried about his attire, necessarily. I said on Twitter last night, I was like, he looks like a lounge singer the morning after a 2-hour set where he's just hung over his shit, trying to, like, reckon with what his life has become.
So there's numerous Mike Brays. How do you rank them as your favorite? Because there is the open, you know, the open collar Mike Bray, the mock turtleneck Mike Bray that we had for a while. There's the regular suit Mike Bray from, like, the Delaware days. No. And then there's Maui Mike Bray.
I think it's Maui Mike Bray and then, like, open shirt Mike Bray. Get a little bit of chest hair flowing.
Yeah, yeah. He needs a chain.
And it has to have, like, the 10 o'clock shadow. Like, his shit ain't even a 5 o'clock shadow. Like, he's got the 10 o'clock shadow going.
He needs, like, the Eric Taylor scruff from Friday Night Lights at all times.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, that, as long as he has the beard and the Maui attire, that's my pick.
I mean, they were playing Chaminade yesterday. There was no reason for him not to have a drink with an umbrella and as the straw for the second half.
He's got a lot of capable assistants.
He really, like, he could have just sat there. I mean, him drunk would still be a top 10 offensive coach in the country.
Like, yeah, that's probably true.
I trust him that well. UCLA's blue jerseys are the best in the country.
Oh, wow. They're up there. I don't know if they're the best, but they're certainly up there.
This is just a complete personal statement. What's your favorite jersey?
That's a bold take. That's not a hot take, first and foremost. My favorite jersey. I am not, like, a crazy huge jersey guy in general, especially when it comes to college basketball. Oh, man. Oh, that's, like, an impossible question.
This stemmed from on Twitter a couple weeks ago. I was trying to – someone asked me for my top 5 jerseys. And it was tough because there are a lot of good ones. And it's in the game right now. Like, you know, you can't pick, like, the 1980s Mark
right.
or something like that. It's tough. It's tough.
Man.
Because it's all personal preference, too.
You know what? Like, I like the cleanness of Villanova's.
I had them in my top 5 or top 10, whatever I did.
I like the color throwback. Scheme. I like USC's color scheme a lot.
Okay.
It's hard to bet against North Carolina.
Yeah.
And their jerseys, like, you know, just classic sky blue, you know, great jerseys. And I think I might go Villanova. I really like Villanova's.
So some of the ones that I came up with, and I went specific, like color and everything like that, was the blue North Carolinas, the blue UCLA's, the gray Wake Forest that they brought out back last year. That was kind of like the Tim Duncan era looking ones. The green Notre Dame with the script Irish, the Nova throwbacks, and the current Seton Hall blues. Like, pretty much if you have script writing on your jersey, I like it.
I'm not a huge script guy. Really? I will say that.
I just think it's a clean look.
Like, people talk about, like, the script pit, like, jerseys all the time. I don't know. They're fine. The other one I want to point out, Duke wears those, like, black ones.
They're one of the few people that can pull off the blacks.
Yeah, the black with the blue, like, the dark blue.
Yeah, I like that color scheme a lot. I like that color scheme a lot. And that's, like, a staple. Like, I remember, like, growing up where Duke, like, first started wearing them and being like, oh, that's different. Like, they were one of the first teams I remember, like, wear, like, a black alternate jersey without having black in their, like, school colors.
Yeah.
Trayvon Blewett is the person you want to take the last shot in the game.
He's up there. Trier would probably be up there for me.
Yep.
Yeah, Blewett's definitely top three. Bold take. Not even a bold take. I think, like, totally defensible take.
I like that. Okay, so do you have any that that's all I had written down. I have one more question that's not bold hot. Do you have any bold hot stuff?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, let's go.
Two of them refer to Texas Tech. So the first one, Texas Tech is a top 25 team right now. Full stop.
I put them in there, my top 25 this week.
Okay. Chris Beard is a top 35 coach in college basketball. And the, like, 35, there's actually a method to my madness. Like, people will probably be like, 35, that's like a really random number.
Yeah.
The reason I do 35 is that there are 351 teams in college basketball, so that would be like a top 10% coach in college basketball.
I say that's bold more than hot because, you know, it's subjective at that point, and what's really the difference between, like, 35 and 55? He's somewhere in there. I'd say that's a bold take. You know, like, again, when I remember I was texting you when it came, I was doing my top 50 coaches, and it's kind of like, you know, how do you judge certain coaches versus other coaches? Like,
looking at them right now.
Right. Like, do you take I'm super high on John Becker because I think what he does defensively is amazing. I think he can translate to most jobs in the country versus a Chris Beard who's now at a power conference and you see what he's doing there. I say that's a bold take. I don't hate it. I don't necessarily disagree with it either.
Yeah, so the reason that I'm as high on Chris Beard as I am is that, to me, he does as good a job as any coach in the country at, A, drawing up plays coming out of timeouts. He's really, really good at it.
Yeah, he is. And, like, he's been that for a while, too.
He's so good at it. He's a really good defensive coach. If you look at the defenses he has coached so far, he had Arkansas Little Rock to a top, like, 35 defense in the country, according to KenPom. It is so hard. Colin
Sexton technical?
Would not be shocking.
Yep, we did.
Did we? Let's see.
Yep, we sure did.
Was it Colin?
I think it was.
No, it was Jones.
No, they called it
right there. Am I just not there yet?
Maybe. They called it right there. I think they called it double technical. He put the ball in the guy's chest and just threw it off of him.
Oh, yeah. Defensive coach. I love the way he gets pressure. I love it. His teams just do such a good job of forcing turnovers and just creating havoc plays, basically.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I love the way that he consistently gets his players in the best matchups possible for them. He is so good at finding the mismatch.
Yeah, that's a very accurate take on him.
Yeah, I really think he could be a great coach anywhere in the country. He is... like, you look at his resume, he's made the NCAA tournament once. That's why I feel like it's kind of a hot take.
Right.
But, you know, like, to me, that dude is just unbelievable.
Yeah, but he also hasn't been at a major conference for that long, so it's a little unfair, I think, to judge. I think, to me, it's unfair to judge, like, mid-major coaches with how many NCAA tournaments they make.
Right. Where that's great.
You lose one time and you're, you know, like the, Metro American Athletic Conference, whatever it is, the MAC. The conference tournament's played on Siena's home court, and Siena could be like a 7 seed and playing home court advantage, and they just they'll win there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's 100% right. Virginia is a top 20 team in the country.
Hot take.
Yeah. So Virginia coming into the year, I think, got a lot of had a lot of question marks because they lost so much of their scoring. Like, you look at all of the pieces. They lose Mariel Shea. They lose London Parentes. They lose Jared Leiter, who played like 25% of their minutes. They lose Darius Thompson. Like, they had a lot of guys transfer out.
Yep.
The thing that, you know, people didn't really recognize, though, is that they had two sit-out redshirt freshmen who are better than those guys.
Yep.
Like,
and DeAndre Hunter in a year in the system.
Yeah, like, DeAndre Hunter is unquestionably better than Shayok, I think. And like Jay Huff gives them something very, very different from what they had last year as a very skilled big man at 7 foot.
Yeah. He's definitely like, I don't remember Virginia having a guy like that.
Yeah. And, you know, they have Marco Anthony, who they brought in like a 6'4 scorer, kind of a two-way player. They bring in Nigel Johnson as well from, I believe, Rutgers, graduate transfer point guard who's been really good so far, just kind of steadying the second unit. Like, he's not a starter or anything, but
right.
he's a great second unit point guard to have. They're as deep as any team in the country. If you look at them 1 through 10, like, their 10th best player is, you know, maybe Jack Salt. Maybe it's Jay Huff right now.
Nobody looks more like a Jack Salt than Jack Salt. Like, that's the guy who just looks exactly like what his name should be.
He really does. And he's from like New Zealand or whatever. Like,
yeah.
There's never been a more Jack Salt, Jack Salt.
And he plays exactly like what you expect a Jack Salt to play like.
Yeah. You look at 6'11", 250 pounds, Jack Salt.
Right.
The most Jack Salt human being.
Right. Like, it's perfect. I laugh every time I see him on the court.
Trying to think of a couple other random hot takes that I have. I mean, like, I had Cincinnati as like a top 7 team in the country coming into the year. Like, that would probably be a bold take, right?
Yeah, that's probably a little bit more bold than hot. I still question their point guard play. Like, Kane Broome's been turnover prone. Like, he's been good, but he's been turnover prone, and he's been in and out of the starting lineup. I think Mick's still trying to figure out exactly what to do there with him, but. You know, like Evans and Cumberland are great wings, and Gary Clark's a really, really good big.
I have a good one, too.
Go ahead.
Creighton's a top 20 team in the country.
Correct take, I think.
You think so?
I mean, I think I had them like – I think they're like 22 right now if I'm like going off the top of my head. And then if they win tonight at Baylor, they're easily, I think, a top 20 team in the country.
Yeah, like they're really good. By the way, UT Arlington's up 11.
Yeah, this is watching awesome. This game. Yeah,
this is awesome.
I think if Creighton wins tonight, they're for sure a top 20 team in the country. If they lose, they still have the potential to be a top 20 team. I still worry about their front court, but man, that backcourt's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. Like Kyrie Thomas and Marcus Foster are unbelievable. Well,
and then even like, you know, like Tyshawn Alexander and Mitchell Ballack, like. They can be, you have to worry about them from so many different ways.
Yeah, you do. That's a really good point.
And McDermott does not get enough credit for how good, speaking of good coaches, McDermott does not get enough credit for being a great offensive coach.
Yeah, I agree with that too. He's really, really good. He's really, really, really good. Colorado, like Tad Boyle, I think is probably a top 40 coach in the country too.
Yep. I would agree with that.
Like maybe even a little bit better than that. Like he's an unbelievable coach. Like you look at the talent this team has, you know, they're playing a freshman point guard. They're playing a sophomore in the starting lineup that like got very few minutes and wasn't very good last year. And, De'Leon Brown, you know, like Namon Wright
King. That's really like the only name people kind of knew.
Yeah. But like that, and you look at like, just, they have a lot of cast offs. They have a lot of, you know, freshmen like McKinley Wright's awesome. He's going to be all Pac-12 freshman year, this freshman team this year, all Pac-12 starting next year. Like that was an incredible get. Deshaun Schwartz hasn't really played all that much yet. Nazar Nikolic, like they're two really, really good freshmen outside of Wright. Haven't really played a ton yet. Tyler B is playing pretty well so far, but like he's still missing a ton of shots. Like they're going to be really good this year. Like they're going to be a team that is dangerous throughout the course of the year, in a way that like they're 90th in KenPom right now. That's crazy to me. Like they're
doesn't make any sense.
Like they're like a top 50 to 60 team right now.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people will yell about KenPom rankings. Like, give it some time. It takes some games for it to really start to get the preseason stuff out and truly value like where teams are.
But like they were also like, it's not even just KenPom, like. They were 3-point underdogs to Mercer,
who
went like 15-17 last year in the Paradise Jam final. I was like, "Are you kidding me?"
Right, right. Yeah, that was a bizarre line.
Yeah. That's about all I got. Like, it's a fun college basketball year so far. Like,
it really is. It's been a lot of fun.
Like, I do think the talent is probably slightly down from what it was last year, but that's fine. It's a really fun year. It's a really It's kind of a, like a reset year almost, it seems like. And it wouldn't surprise me if we got another reset year in 2 years if the NBA draft, like, one and done stuff comes to fruition. Yep. But it's a really fun year so far. I'm really enjoying it.
No, it's completely open. Like, you know, there's still big questions for clear favorite to win the title, clear favorite to win National Player of the Year. Granted, it's early, but...
And, like, no. We have this big race for number one overall pick, too.
Yeah, yeah. And storylines are abound, and it's not FBI storylines, which is always a plus.
Yeah, 100%.
Sam, where can everyone find your stuff?
You can find me at The Athletic. I would appreciate just, you know, one of you subscribing after this podcast. Just somewhere, one of you taking the time.
And if you do, let us know. I'll retweet you.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. I would appreciate it. All my work goes there. I do some NBA draft stuff. Like I said, I think I told you before, maybe on this podcast, I don't remember. I'll have something on Michael Porter Thursday. I will have a filmy thing on Friday that I'm going to do. A couple of other kind of things throughout the course of the year. So a lot of really good stuff. You can follow my podcast over at the Game Theory Podcast. Reegs is on it pretty regularly. We talk college basketball and stuff. You know, I'm trying to figure out how I want to handle college basketball this season. If I want to just offshoot another feed for college basketball, or if I want to just combine it with the NBA feed, we'll see. But, thank you all for, you know, taking the time and requesting me. That's so random to me. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it.
After you rate, review, subscribe to Sam's Game Theory Podcast, rate, review, subscribe to this if you haven't yet. Follow the show on Twitter at FundamentalESD. Have a good Thanksgiving. Hope everyone can watch the games. If you are not hosting or unable to, we will have you caught up. Ben should be back this weekend, so we'll be back with you guys Sunday night.